Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast. We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm your host, Tyler Franke. With Halloween just around the corner, we're indulging our sweet tooth on today's episode. We'll be talking with Amy Light Ramage, a local fitness guru and nutritional consultant, about some of the best and worst Halloween candy out there. Of course, according to Amy, it's all bad. Party pooper. Later, we've got some more fun and exciting Canby fire stories to tell you about, including possibly the only fire in the area's history that also landed the responding firefighters in hot water with their wives. We'll tell you all about that and more on Canby Then. But first, the news. The Oregon Department of Aviation's proposal for a $37 million expansion and runway extension at the Aurora State Airport has lacked transparency, been unrealistic and overly optimistic in its expectations, and refused the involvement of county and city jurisdictions whose residents would be directly impacted by the proposal. These accusations and more form the basis of an open letter released this week by Wilsonville Mayor Tim Knapp and the Wilsonville City Council, which was at times scathing in its criticism of a decision they say was, quote, effectively made behind closed doors, without any intergovernmental notification or public process. As far as Wilsonville can tell, there were no public hearings held or public discussion of advancing a massive $37 million project that was originally projected at costing $7 million, a 500% cost increase, the letter says. There are no detailed capital improvement plans for the Aurora State Airport expansion available for public inspection. There was no notice to other impacted state agencies, local governments, area residents, or businesses that the Department of Aviation, without consultation, had decided to move the project forward. Wilsonville and Clackamas County leaders are united in saying that their concerns are not purely local or neighborhood-based, but rather that this is a regional issue which needs regional involvement. Why is the ODA proposing to spend $37 million in public funds to extend a runway by 1,000 feet when an existing airport with a 6,000-foot runway that is fully served with all urban services is only 22 nautical miles away, the letter asks, referring to the municipal airport in Salem. We understand that the Salem Municipal Airport has struggled for years to be commercially viable and is actively seeking more operations. The letter says that the impacts of expansion to area roads, the environment, city and county services, and the many farms in the surrounding area have not been adequately studied or addressed. It concludes by asking the ODA to withdraw its request for funding, agree to an intergovernmental agreement with Clackamas County, Marion County, Wilsonville, Aurora, and any other impacted jurisdictions, and develop a new master plan for Aurora State Airport and all of Oregon's state-owned airports. To check out the full letter by Wilsonville Mayor Tim Knapp, visit our website, canbenowpod.com. Last week, Hanlon Development, the owner and lead developer of the new Dahlia Building and Canby Civic Block, asked Canby residents to dream about what businesses are needed to breathe new life and energy into the downtown core. This weekend, Hanlon and its local partners are offering current and prospective business owners the chance to start making some of those dreams come true with a business boot camp designed to activate and elevate small business entrepreneurship in Canby, particularly downtown. The weekend will feature workshops designed to help entrepreneurs access the capital they need to open their doors while innovating in a complex retail environment. Participants will receive mentorship in business strategy, finance, accounting, website development, marketing, law, insurance, and design, culminating in a pitch conversation with the prize of $1,000 and 1 month free rent in the Canby Civic Block. Who should attend? Prospective small business owners interested in setting up shop in Canby, makers or artisans interested in a shared micro retail space, established small business owners who want to relocate to the Canby Civic Block, small business owners looking for mentorship or to expand their network, and anyone who wants to be part of Canby's next generation of small business owners, entrepreneurs, job creators, and community leaders. For more information or to register, visit canbycivicblock.com/events. The Canby Police Department and Clackamas County Sheriff's Office were among the law enforcement agencies who assisted federal authorities in an operation targeting 22 members of a criminal organization responsible for trafficking large quantities of methamphetamine, heroin, and cocaine in Oregon and Washington State. Early Wednesday morning, the FBI, Homeland Security Investigations, the Westside Interagency Narcotics Task Force, and the Clackamas County Interagency Task Force, which includes Canby PD, conducted a multi-agency law enforcement operation, leading to the arrest of 17 defendants. According to the unsealed indictment, a drug cartel based in Michoacán, Mexico, distributed methamphetamines, heroin, and cocaine to Victor Alvarez Farfan, 43, of Oregon City. Farfan and his associates manufactured crystal methamphetamine from liquid form and distributed it to other members of the conspiracy for sale in Hillsboro, Gresham, Portland, and Hood River, Oregon, and Tacoma, Washington. Farfan and his associates also distributed heroin and cocaine in the Portland metro area. John Armis, 41, of Hillsboro, distributed methamphetamine he received from Farfan via a local distribution cell in the Hillsboro area. This is another clear example of public safety working together to make a difference at every level, city, county, state, and federal agencies, said Craig Roberts, Clackamas County Sheriff. I can attest that countless frontline officers have been working around the clock to hold major drug traffickers accountable for their criminal activities. Our united message is, don't bring this to Oregon, or we will be knocking on your door. 15 of the 22 defendants were arraigned in federal court on Wednesday. The identities of the 5 remaining defendants remain under seal. All defendants are expected to make their first appearances within the week. In sports this week, it's playoff time. The 21st-seeded Canby girls soccer team were on the road Saturday, where they pulled off the thrilling upset over 12th-seeded Glencoe. Freshman Joey Baggio was the player of the game, scoring both goals in the 2-1 victory. Next up is a spooky second-round showdown against 5th-ranked Sunset High School at 7 p.m. on Halloween. The Canby volleyball team also qualified for the playoffs. Sadly, their season ended with a first-round exit against 7th-seeded Summit on the road. The Cougars had a great season this year, and we applaud their hard work and achievements. The Canby football season came to a merciful end Friday as they fell on the road to Roseburg 34-7. The loss wraps up a brutal season in which the Cougars were outscored 331-62 over the course of 9 games, all losses. Although a season like this will no doubt lead to the usual finger-pointing from local sports fans, we want to say that there's no doubt that our boys worked hard this season and gave it their all. They deserved better, and we're sorry for how things turned out. Finally, the Canby cross-country teams had strong showings at the Three Rivers League District Championships last week. The boys finished 4th, just 1 point from qualifying for state. Canby's Cole Thomas, however, finished 5th overall and will run in the 6A State Championship at Lane Community College on November 3rd. In the Pacific Northwest Cross Country Championships on Friday, another great result as the boys came in 3rd in the field of 8, and junior Matthew Powell finished 1st overall. Okay, so my guest today is Amy Light Ramage. She is a personal trainer and nutritionist and the proprietor here at Fit for Excellence Gym in Oregon City. Amy, how are you?
Great, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for being on the program. So I asked you on because I heard something recently that I don't really believe, but you know how you hear stuff. I just wanted to get a second opinion. So Halloween's coming up and I heard that maybe candy is not that good for you? Is that crazy?
I mean, that crazy is to me. Correct. Oh, that is correct.
Oh, wait. You're saying it's... Oh, it's true.
Yes.
Shoot.
Okay. How do you feel after you eat a lot of candy?
Okay. Well, we're just going straight to after.
Yeah.
When I'm eating the candy, I feel really good.
Okay.
But if we skip ahead, I feel not that great. My stomach hurts, I guess. My favorite kind of candy is sour candy, so it also hurts my mouth. But anyway, so why is candy not that good for you, Amy?
Well, it actually spikes your insulin levels, and for most people...
That sounds bad. Spiked insulin sounds bad.
Not great. For most people, we actually already have, and ideally have enough sugar energy, which is energy, in our body to get through a day without adding candy, which is just processed sugar that makes you feel like garbage.
Yeah.
Ideally, we're having a normal breakfast that has carbs, fats, and proteins, which are macronutrients, and that you are having a sustained amount of energy that actually makes you feel well.
Yeah.
Because your body's processing through it.
Yeah.
It's sustainable. When people cut out meals and or choose candy instead.
Yeah.
You know people that have had that amazing sugar high to that amazing sugar low.
I have children. I've seen this, yes.
Okay, great. Yep, we all love it. So I really like to educate people on how they feel after they eat something.
Yeah, I know you asked me that question. That was good. I kind of wasn't expecting that. So yeah, that's a good way to approach it other than just taking the science of it or whatever. Like, who cares about my insulin levels? I don't even know what that is. But when I do think about the impact it has on me, that kind of brings it home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. And then, yeah, when it comes to Halloween, just like every other holiday, I was talking to one of my other trainers in here, and she described the significance that our culture has placed around it, and everybody makes an excuse, kind of, in that it is Halloween.
Right, right.
And so
I have to eat candy. It's right. Halloween. I can't let my kids eat all. They have 10 pounds of candy here. That's like a quarter of their body weight. That would be a bad parent if I didn't help them eat this.
Right.
Yeah.
So in years past, we can significantly look back and say whether we're trying to be quote unquote healthy or not, eating candy and having this great time with our kids or whoever we were trick-or-treating with. And then other years where in the gym, I've set goals with everybody that came in that day and said, okay, who's on board to not have any tonight? Let's do it as a challenge. Let's do it together. And every time we do that, the people that complete that, which is actually not that hard once you set your mind up to not eat it.
Yeah.
But when they do that, they actually have like this amazing sense of accomplishment and victory, and they wake up and they feel great, and they're like, they think, I'm really glad I did that. That was amazing. I did not miss that sugar.
Right.
Where the people that take advantage of the holiday, you know, dig in, go for it or whatever, inevitably feel like garbage the next day. And so it's not that we needed to create that victory, but it is amazing what just making it through that one day without it can do for you. I mean, it's like a confidence builder to make it past all that temptation.
Yeah, for sure. So I initially reached out to you because I found this blog. It's called Eat This, Not That. And I'll post a link to this really interesting list on our website and social media. But they ranked the 51 Halloween candies based off the worst and the best in terms of their nutritional value, basically, whatever candy has as far as nutritional value. But they looked at the sugar, they looked at the fats, they looked at the ingredients as far as some having, you know, more artificial and less natural ingredients or no natural ingredients. And we don't have time to go through all of them, but I wanted to look at maybe the 10 best, 10 worst, and we'll just go through them quickly here. This one kind of surprised me. Number 10 was Twizzlers, was the 10 worst. 9 was Starburst. Mike and Ike's was number 8. M&M's peanut variety was number 7. And then number 6 was Nestle 100 Grand, a fun size bar. So we're at 6 so far. Any of those standing out to you? If I'm surprising you, does that sound about right? These are the 10th through the 6th worst candies, according to Eat This, Not That.
Oh, well.
Twizzler, to me, I hate Twizzlers, you know, but they don't strike me as, like, a really bad candy. Like, when I'm thinking of candies, it would be bad for me, because they're just, like, nothing. It's like eating plastic.
Well, it is that it's just pure sugar.
Okay, well.
There's zero value.
In a Twizzler?
Because
if you bite one end and the other end off, you can make it a straw. So that's pretty valuable.
Yeah.
Biodegradable. So
the only time, and I will share the only time to eat, which there is not. If there's any diabetics or anybody, there is not a great time to eat that. But a lot of people in athletic events will use that.
Yeah.
So if you're going to have Twizzlers or Starburst this week, I want to see 100-meter sprint right afterwards.
Okay. Well, I mean, you won't see me doing that, but maybe you'll see some other people listening to this. Let's move on. So the 5th worst candy is, this one's painful, M&M's. It's the 5th worst candy for you. That one hurts. This one does as well. This is one of my favorites. Butterfingers are not good for you, apparently. And then Hershey's Take Fives. Any of those stand out to you? Butterfinger, I guess, has a lot of fat in it.
From the peanut butter.
From the peanut butter part of it, yeah.
Which they like to. It's Yeah, they're like, they, well, those don't surprise me at all. Well, but so, they like to use peanuts and candy as a reason to be healthier.
So adding even one, quote unquote, fun size Butterfinger to your food intake every day will add 10 pounds to your body in a year, according to this blog. Yeah, lots of fat in that. That's too bad.
So depressing.
Okay, number two and one are related, but number two, Reese's Pieces.
Okay.
So E.T. was probably hurting about that. He had a pot belly, right? So maybe that's why. yeah, it has the snack size portion of Reese's Pieces has 10.5 grams of sugar, which is an awful lot. Mm. That not surprise you, I guess.
Not surprised.
And number one, did you see this list? Do you know what it is? Do you want to take a guess what the worst is? I kind of gave you a clue saying it's related.
Oh, boy. It can't be Snickers.
No. It's probably Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
No way.
The worst candy for you. Yeah. So the American Heart Association says an adult woman should have no more than 25 grams of added sugar a day. Reese's has half of that into one serving. So mm-hmm. They have 14 grams of sugar in one serving of a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
And mixing processed sugar with fat is probably one of the worst things for our bodies.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so moving on. These are the healthiest candies to have. Tootsie Rolls is number 10. I shouldn't have said healthy. They're the least bad for you. According to this list, Grandma will be happy about this. Werther's Original. Number 9, best Halloween candy to eat. Three Musketeers, York Peppermint Patties, and M&M Pretzels.
Hmm. I don't agree with
any of those.
I don't agree with any of this.
Yeah. So this is just painful for Amy to even go through. But to me, this is a lot of candy that my grandparents really like to have around the house.
Maybe it's just because it's the most old-fashioned.
I mean, it seems like it's kind of old-fashioned. Maybe they made it slightly healthier back then.
So here's the thing. A sugar is a sugar,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So I'm not seeing a lot of best case versus worst case in there.
Okay. We'll power through then. We got Nerds is the fifth best candy. I love this. Nerds are one of my favorites. Dum Dums. Again, that's another one of those like older. She's just making faces over here. She has no idea where this blog is coming from. You're going to love this. Smarties and then Pixie Sticks, which is literally just a paper packet of sugar.
That's like Kool-Aid.
Yeah, yeah. Sick. It only has 2.1 grams of sugar per straw. I don't know what the rest of that is because I thought it was just all sugar. And the number one Halloween candy, according to Eat This, Not That, is Jelly Belly Jelly Beans.
Is that part of that study where you just eat one and then it's like not that bad for you? One, literal one.
Well, it's just 7 grams of sugar per, let's see how much this is. It's only 4 calories per bean. So they're the slimmest way to enjoy cotton candy, toasted marshmallows, and strawberry shortcake.
There's their sales line. There it is.
Yeah, maybe they sponsored this. I don't know. Okay, so that was painful for you. You didn't like that very much. Uh-huh. But you did find a study that said maybe candy in some cases isn't that bad for you.
Yeah, that's what's crazy. So most of the time, so I make a lot of nutrition plans, and a lot of people have obviously very strong food addictions and uh-huh. sugar addictions and sweet tooths that we're actually trying to get rid of.
Yeah.
So giving yourself something when you're putting your life in balance and organizing your food and making yourself feel better, I feel like candy's just cheap.
Yeah.
You know? It's not really what I want to... Most people, if you're going to really do it, we're not going to do candy. Right.
You need to find like a non-food-based reward for eating healthy. Yeah.
And if you're going to eat something and indulge in something, make it count.
Yeah.
Like not Twizzlers.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, no, according to this blog, definitely don't do Twizzlers. Do Pixie Sticks.
So. Yeah, do a Pixie Stick. I mean, come on. So, but in the end, we know that sugar causes inflammation, and sugar causes diabetes, and sugar causes, obviously, weight gain.
Yeah.
So, for the most part, we actually try to retrain our brains to not desire candy, which is really funny, again, that we have this week that everybody thinks about it. But then I was going through and looking at different scientific studies and found actually on Psychology Today, that they discovered that Halloween candy isn't actually as bad as they thought it was. And this is interesting.
This study, I think, was sponsored by Hershey's Corporation.
Correct. but they said people who eat candy live longer, but here is the puncher, and I love this.
Yeah, this is
so
awesome.
So Harvard School of Public Health revealed that people who eat candy outlive those who don't. And every but the people that they studied that had the greatest health benefits had 1 to 3 pieces a month.
1 to 3 pieces of candy a month. This is someone,
and then you'll live longer.
This is someone that goes to visit grandma's house once a month. They give them one piece of candy. They're living forever because they're getting grandma's love and whatever. But this is not a normal person. This is not a normal way that people eat candy.
Correct. So
Amy, we have just a couple minutes here. Is there any healthy alternatives to candy that people might consider either handing out that might not get their houses TP'd? We're not talking like, you know, the dental floss that I used to get when I was a kid and we hated those houses. But anything that they could either hand out or maybe just if they're feeling that craving around Halloween and don't want to do candy, is there anything that is actually healthier alternative to Halloween candy?
Yeah. I mean, obviously you're going to spend more money the higher quality you get.
Okay.
Right? And I always tell everybody, if you are going to pass out candy, go buy something you don't like.
Okay.
Like, that's not rocket point. Science. Buy something like
Twizzlers for me.
Yeah. Buy Pixie Sticks.
I'm gonna make these kids really fat because yeah. Twizzlers
are bad for you. If you don't like them, you don't want a bowl of something you love sitting around you, yeah, tempting you all night, right?
That makes sense.
Second thing.
I think it's just when you go to buy candy, you look at what you would like. You know,
yeah, don't do that.
Okay, well.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I'm going to buy my grandma's candy. Yeah, don't buy where there's originals.
Don't buy what you love. Second thing, don't buy it because it's on sale a week in advance.
Okay.
Like, yeah, literally spend $3 and buy it the day of.
Do it the day before.
Yeah. Even if you're really a sugar addict or love it, like, buy it half an hour before. Okay. Yeah. Don't keep it in your house.
Right.
And then if
you're trying to give up smoking, you shouldn't keep cigarettes in your glove box.
Good advice.
Yeah. Cool.
And then if you, there are like Annie's makes little jelly candies.
Oh, okay.
You know, you can buy like organic little
Love
snack
Annie's.
Packs.
Yeah.
And then kids are less likely to, you know, blow through them or, you know, maybe they don't love them, but they definitely don't love getting a pencil or.
So, dental floss.
Yeah.
Toothbrushes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But don't buy something you love.
Cool. I had somebody in my neighborhood that when they ran out of candy, they would give, they would just give cash.
Oh, well, that's cool.
We liked that house. That's the only, I think, non-food alternative that won't get your house TP'd. But anyway, Amy, this was really fun. Thanks so much.
Yes.
I'm still probably going to eat a lot of candy, but I won't tell you about it. So don't judge me. I hope to have you on again sometime.
Thank you.
Any final thoughts?
Yes, actually. If they want to go on any of my social media at Amy Light Ramage, I will actually post the Halloween candy to hand out.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah,
I'll leave it there.
Good. Yeah, so check that out, and happy Halloween.
Much of the history of a town can be gleaned from the history of its fires. In these stories, we see a community's courage, values, and in Canby's case anyway, its charm. Two terrible fires occurred in the vicinity of Canby in 1916. The first happened at Willoite Springs in Molalla, named after its discoverer, pioneer John Willoite. 45 years earlier, John Willoite had laid claim to the property and constructed the building that would become the Willoite Springs Hotel. Willoite Springs is now a county park, but in 1916 it was one of Clackamas County's most well-known and popular tourist destinations. The hotel contained 40 rooms, and there were numerous cottages surrounding it as well. Fortunately, when the fire broke out in February, the hotel was closed and only one patron was lodging there. The McLaren brothers, who operated the hotel, tried to put out the blaze with chemical fire extinguishers, but their efforts were useless. The hotel burned to the ground, as did two of the cottages. A happy end to this story, at least. Less than 6 months later, a new, larger, and improved Willoite Springs Hotel was opened on the site of the old one. Built from, quote, big logs harvested on the property, the hotel hosted a large crowd from Canby, Oregon City, Salem, and Portland for its grand opening on July 22nd. A turkey dinner was served, and the party danced until after midnight, the Oregonian reported. The second terrible 1916 fire happened in April in Hubbard, breaking out in an office building and decimating much of the downtown core. Newspapers reported that the fire spread rapidly and threatened to destroy most of the town. Firefighting apparatus and even dynamite were called for from neighboring Woodburn. In 1923, a fire of unknown origin decimated the Barlow Post Office, which was also the home of W.S. Bud Toole. Fortunately, Bud wasn't home. The fire started in the home's attached woodshed and quickly spread, even burning down several telephone poles that knocked out service for the area temporarily. In May 1942, a 2-year-old St. Bernard named Prince heroically saved thousands of Thanksgiving dinners from being barbecued 6 months early. Prince, the farm dog at a Maxburg turkey factory owned by a Mr. and Mrs. Lamore, was sleeping in his usual perch on the second floor of a hatchery building when he sensed something amiss. His loud barking attracted the nightman, who soon found that an overheated stove in the brooder house had set the building on fire. More than 5,000 young turkeys were inside. The alarm was sounded, and local firefighters arrived promptly on the scene. They extinguished the blaze before considerable damage was done, resulting in only a small hole in the roof and the loss of about a dozen birds. Yum. A contingent of Canby firefighters, asked to be on hand to protect the fairgrounds during the annual fireworks show, were late to arrive to the Clackamas County Fair in 1949. But it wasn't their fault. Just blame the overzealous ticket takers at the gate booth, who refused to let them in until they paid admission. They paid rather than have an argument, said a gracious fire chief Clayton Yoder, who was among the party. Two of them had previously purchased season passes. The rest were charged daily admission, 60 cents. It's a good thing, too. No less than 2 fires broke out in the dry grass that night, which Canby firefighters were able to put out with hand hoses. The, quote, everybody pays police, as dubbed by the Canby Herald, also caught the youngsters who'd march in the Kitty Capers parade on opening day. The kiddies had been thrilled with the chance to be part of the parade and march with the giant Cliff Thompson, a Hollywood actor who was a reputed 8 feet 7 inches tall, and they thought they'd be able to sit in the grandstand and enjoy the rest of the show, but they too were hunted down and charged admission. As a lover and longtime attendee at the Clackamas County Fair, this story does not surprise me at all. The 70s was a time of radical growth and change for the country, and this was also true in Canby. It was also a time for a bunch of huge fires. One that stands out, and that some listeners may even remember, was the devastating fire at the Canby Big Store, a local landmark for over 60 years, which was engulfed and completely destroyed in less than an hour in August of 1973. 35 of the district's 38 firefighters fought to control the blaze within the 10,000-square-foot concrete building, which had been erected in 1913. The 3-story building, which at one time was the largest retail store in Clackamas County, had been a marketplace that housed a number of businesses, the Canby Land Market, Top Flight's Beauty Shop, Canby Hardware and Implement Company, Jeans Looks Television Repair Shop, and others. Most of them were decimated in the fire, which started at the back wall and spread quickly along the wood floors, ceilings, and staircases. Also destroyed was a Volkswagen owned by Miss Margaret Schoonover. It caught fire when the store's first floor windows exploded and shot flames across the street. The losses in terms of the building, merchandise, and equipment was estimated at over $300,000, the equivalent of more than $1.6 million today. Another 1973 fire happened in Woodburn, but it was covered in the Canby Herald and bears mentioning here. The fire broke out at an unassuming building on Front Street that was leased to a company called TLM Publishing Co. The building itself was owned by Eugene Stoller, former publisher of the Woodburn Independent. No one was hurt in the fire, but it caused an estimated $15,000 to $20,000 in damage. So why was it noteworthy? Well, first of all, it was pretty clearly an act of arson. Woodburn firefighters said the door into the publishing company had been forced open, and the fire showed evidence of 2 separate points of origin, as well as an explosive device being used. Also, TLM Publishing Co. published a very specific type of newspaper, specifically pornographic newspapers. Their titles were Ginger and Spice and the Whorehouse Gazette. According to Fire Chief Martin Krupica, it was real hardcore stuff. I'd say it sure sounds like it was pretty hot. Heyo! We have many more colorful and thrilling stories to share with you from the history of the Canby Fire District, but it'll have to wait till next time on Canby Then. Welcome to the Can Be Now Soapbox. This is a part of our show where we're a little more laid back, sharing our opinions about...
So laid back. So chill.
Sharing our opinions about local issues and state and federal things that affect us here locally, just for anybody who cares.
I get to join the show a little
and
bit.
And we've got our producer, Tyler, on. Tyler, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Feeling better?
Yes, I'm feeling a lot better. That's good. I'm excited. I'm currently... working on the Halloween episode.
Yeah, so that's a little show news for you.
Yeah. I'll
tell people a little promo about that. We've been working hard on this episode.
Yeah, it's a really cool idea. I like what all the people that you got to help out with it. That was really exciting.
Yeah, we got some high school kids who are part of the drama club, and they were all together because they were rehearsing for Curtains, which opens this next weekend. And you'll actually hear them talk about that in our next episode.
I like how we're having a plugception here. We plugged something else inside of a plug inside of our own
it
segment.
It's plugception. How deep does it go? But yeah, so that episode is happening, and they were really cool, really fun to work with on this. And then, of course, a lot of your stories, listeners, about your local experiences with the supernatural or paranormal here in Canby, which were
crazy.
They were really cool stories.
What's really crazy is, like, I watch a lot of paranormal shows on TV, and they're always like, you know, in this house. And it's like, whatever, it's just a house. But listening to your guys' stories where you're like, right off of Redwood Street. And I'm like, whoa, I used to live there. Yeah. Like, I used to live close to that house that you're describing.
Yeah, it really brings it home.
It's really creepy.
Yeah. And you don't think about that stuff happening here, you know, but it does. So
yeah, absolutely.
So that was really fun. That's going to drop Tuesday. We'll drop it early in the morning, so you have a chance to grab it that morning or throughout the day. And then obviously you can grab it Halloween, but we wanted to come out a little early for Halloween just for folks to get in the Halloween spirit. So.
Yeah, for sure.
So check that out. Any other show news we got going on?
We have, oh man, we've hit like 100 listeners
first day where we were over 100.
Yeah.
Rounding in on 1,500 for the whole channel, which is awesome.
This is great. Yeah. It's so cool to know that you guys are out there listening to our show.
Yeah, and just around the corner here, and we had the story on it at the top of the show about the business boot camp, but we're actually going to be going to that. We're really excited about it.
Yes.
I think it's going to be awesome. I really like how Mary Hanlon and Hanlon Development are putting this on, because obviously they're looking for tenants for folks to go into that civic block, but the way that they're approaching it with this boot camp is really, it's almost like, I think of it in terms of sports, almost like a farm system, you know, like for a baseball team. Tyler doesn't know sports either.
So politics and sports, the two things you talk about.
I love.
Eyes glazed over.
So, but for baseball teams, you know, when they're looking for a good player, they can either go out and sign someone, but that can be really expensive. It could be hard to even find someone. Even if they do find someone, it may not work out, you know, you can't always foresee. So that would be the equivalent of kind of what they're trying to do as far as find a business to come in.
Right.
But what baseball teams also like to do is develop from within, right? So either local players that they already have in their system at, you know, AA, AAA, and just turn those players into good players. And that's kind of what Hanlon is trying to do here, is take folks that already either have a business or have a good idea for a business and teach them some things that they may not know that can help them along their way and maybe make a successful business that can then be part of the downtown core or the civic block rather than bringing someone in.
Yeah.
Kind of a grassroots thing. I think it's really cool.
I always get excited because it's like I have all these different ideas, all these different things I want to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it works. I don't know how business works.
Yeah.
Like, I know how to come up with cool ideas. I know how to produce a podcast.
How do you business?
How does business do?
That's a question we'll be asking at the upcoming business boot camp. How do you business?
So just to be able to sit down and have the opportunity where it's like you and I are doing this new thing, and it gives us the opportunity to learn how to do other things.
Yeah.
So if that's someone, if you're like that, if you're someone who's like, oh, I've got all these great ideas, I've learned how to make the toilets even better in Miami, it's like, then, but I don't know how to run a business. Like, yeah. This is probably a good starting place where you can learn some of that stuff.
And I'm just really excited about the networking opportunities to meet folks that are already doing really cool stuff in Camby, sure. You know, which we get to do a lot through the podcast anyway, but get to do more of that. And also folks that are kind of where we're at, just getting started, yeah. Have a really good idea, getting it out there, and kind of form some synergy and some community among that. You know, I posted on Facebook today that we have the chance here to really be the future of Camby, and yeah. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I think we do.
Yeah, and so wrapping that up with this pitch session, which I'm calling just personally the Dahlia Tank. So
instead of the Shark Tank,
exactly, the Shark Tank. Yeah, but so they'll have like a panel of investors, and people will get the opportunity to actually pitch their business, either their current or business idea. We're gonna do it.
Yeah, we're gonna be there. We're gonna
give it a shot.
We're gonna give our sob story, try and make them cry, yes. And then we're gonna
pump them up with all
our business ideas and. Yeah. Like, oh, you didn't like that one? I got this one, too. Wait, that's not a good one. Hold on. I got a million of these.
Right. Like that scene from The Office where Michael and Dwight are, like, talking about their best bathroom ideas for businesses.
Yeah. All of my ideas are for the bathroom.
It's like a toilet brush.
That's
a toilet.
Because it's an easy place to get ideas.
Yeah, but absolutely. That'll be fun. I actually hope that they record that or even televise that. I don't know if CTV is planning to do that, but I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Then people could steal my ideas.
Well,
all my toilet ideas.
I mean, if it's a good idea, then you would win, and then it'd be pretty much copyrighted at that point. Or trademarked. But and if it's not a bad idea, then they can or not a good idea, then they can have it. Right.
Yeah. If it doesn't make me money, you can have it.
Yeah. Cool. So that's pretty much all we have for this edition of Soapbox.
Yeah, we're not getting deep into the politics of Camby
right
now.
Well, the elections, people's ballots are out, and we have something cool planned for our next Soapbox about the election.
Keep telling me.
Tyler doesn't know anything about it yet, but it's going to be really fun. But yeah, so
I guess this is just a quick one because we really wanted to say thank you. We're seeing a lot of growth.
Yeah.
In the last week, we've seen a ton of growth. So I seriously want to thank you. If you ever see me, I'm a nerdy guy with glasses, bigger guy with a hat on. Usually, if you see me, please let me know in person if you listen to our show. Mm-hmm. And I would just, it would make my world to know that you're listening to our
show. And keep sharing with your friends. If you like this, if you like what we're trying to do, like we always say, your friends probably will too, you know, or at least, encourage them to give it a chance. So, I hope to see folks out at this business boot camp.
Yeah, that'd be cool,
so
too.
Check that out. It's free. The website, I already had it on the news story, so I don't need to tell you the website again. But that's it for this week's Soapbox. We're going to kick it over to Out and About.
All right.
Okay, so for Out and About this week, I'm here with Clackamas County Administrator Don Krupp. Don, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Thanks so much for being on the show. You want to tell people where we are and what we're doing?
So we are in the Clackamas County Board of County Commissioners Board Hearing Room right here in Oregon City. And we are celebrating 175 years of Clackamas County government. So we had an opportunity to be able to invite a number of past county commissioners to join us and to talk about their time when they were serving in the role of being a county commissioner and what their most favored accomplishments were.
Yeah.
We heard from a historian here today as well about the history of the creation of Clackamas County.
Yeah, that was really cool. So Clackamas County was founded in 1843. I guess the courthouse would have been just barely 20 or 30 years old at that point, right?
Yeah, and it certainly isn't the courthouse we're in right now. Yes.
That was really cool. It was awesome to hear from the commissioners. You want to speak just a little bit why you feel it's important to recognize that legacy and that history that we have here in Clackamas County?
Well, so think about this, 175 years, and today we're a little over 400,000 citizens here in Clackamas County, but if you think about how many people have lived here and relied upon what we do for 175 years, that's the main reason to celebrate for the time we've been here for 175 years.
Cool. We had some cake. What did you think of it?
Well, I love the chocolate cake, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Now, the punch was not spiked, I'll tell you that, too.
Oh, okay, so, yeah. Okay. Well, so he says. So, but, yeah, we had a great event here. We have been posting some pictures on Instagram and social media, so check those out. And, Don, thanks so much for having us here and for putting on this event.
Thank you so much.
And that's our show. I'm your host, Tyler Franke. Our producer is Tyler Clausen. Special thanks to our guest today, Amy Light Ramage. Hey, if you liked what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes. Be sure to catch our show Thursday. We'll be sitting down with the cast and director of Curtains, Canby High School's fall musical, which opens this weekend. And it's finally here. We are about to release our amazing and much-anticipated Halloween special featuring your real-life stories of strange and unexplainable encounters that happen right here in our town. You won't want to miss it, and you can only find it on Canby Now. Look for that to drop Tuesday, just in time for Halloween. If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Canby Now, or on our website, canbynowpod.com. Thanks for listening.